We are going to talk about the hyper-specialization of youth sports this hour and why our guest says it's dangerous and counterproductive. Good morning, I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Monday, June 16th. We've all heard about the concern over concussions for kids who are playing youth sports, but our guest says the heightened pressure on child athletes to be adult athletes and the hyper-specialization of youth sports can also lead to serious injuries and less athletic success. We'll discuss the issue and welcome your thoughts and your experiences. Do you have a child or a grandchild involved in youth sports? Just one? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Let me welcome our guest. David Epstein is a reporter at ProPublica and the author of The Sports Gene, Inside the Science of Extraordinary Athletic Performance. He also wrote an op-ed piece, Sports Should Be Child's Play, that appeared recently in the New York Times. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Thanks a lot for being with us. So explain a little bit more. What exactly is hyper-specialization?
Well, that's when a child quits sort of other sports and activities so that they can focus more than 8 months a year on one sport, and it usually involves traveling, year-round participation in the same sport, and often private coaching as well, but specifically dropping other physical activities to focus on one single sport for more than 8 months a year.
And do kids do this a lot?
Oh, I would say it's routine in competitive sports leagues now around the country. In fact, the selection is sort of getting pushed earlier and earlier and earlier, so the kids are forced to sort of try out for travel teams at younger and younger ages. And one of the just one club as an example that I mentioned in the piece was one where I am in New York City, where there's a U6 team, which is under six for soccer, that then turns into U7 pre-travel program, which primes kids to be able to do travel league soccer before the age of eight.
Wow, that's super young too. What and when you say that this hyper specialization is dangerous and counterproductive, I mean, are we talking about just for the very young?
It's not just for the very young. Even through at least the early to mid teen years, it looks like, and it's especially dangerous for kind of the growing, developing body, because they're for the first time now, they're child athletes showing up with all sorts of injuries that were previously confined to adults, because they're doing sort of very, very repetitive motions over and over and over and over, and sort of ligament tears, fractures in their backs and limbs, things like when the way that the hip joint is developing when you're young, certain athletic movements put a lot of stress on it that causes it to be malformed. And so for the first time, some sports doctors are seeing kids in their 20s who were specialized when they were younger, who are now needing hip replacements in their 20s, which previously was not something that you would see in young athletes.
My goodness, hip replacements in their 20s. Well, what's driving this trend?
Well, there are a couple things driving it. One is sort of, with increasing sort of focus on financial incentives for sports, even though it's kind of misconstrued and there are very few options for that and it's difficult to get scholarships and to be in the pros. But people have seen that and conceive as starting earlier. Parents, I think, of starting earlier as an advantage, and that's sort of gone hand in hand with this idea of the so-called 10,000 hours rule that I write about a lot in the Sports Gene, which is this idea that 10,000 hours of practice is both necessary and sufficient to make anyone an expert in anything, including sports. And so that's a lot of hours, so people have been inclined to push earlier and earlier, thinking that that's some sort of kind of magical number. But also, the sports themselves have started competing against one another. So each sport wants to kind of have the largest pool of talent. So if one sport starts forcing kids to play year-round at 9, well, then another sport can do it at 8 and keep a kid in basketball instead of in soccer, say. So the youth coaches and youth sports leagues, which depend on parents for money, basically, have started competing against one another to go younger and younger and younger so that they can keep the largest influx of athletes.
Well, so does it, besides the dangerous aspect of causing adult injuries in these children, does it at least train them in this sport to the point that they're better than the rest? Is this successful to start a kid that early?
This is the surprising part, and it looks like it isn't. So in addition to, you mentioned the health, and for some unknown reasons, there's a protective effect of playing multiple sports. So this isn't an issue of putting less time in sports, it's just being less specialized. But also, it doesn't seem to work from the athletic development standpoint. So if you, contrary to this 10,000 hours idea, if you actually look at eventual adult elite athletes, they actually practice less in their eventual sport, and these are high-level people that they go pro in, until at least age 12, usually even later. So there's just a brand new study out on athletes at UCLA, and varsity intercollegiate athletes at UCLA specialized in a sport at an average age of 15.4, whereas UCLA undergrads who had played sports but didn't make the intercollegiate level specialized at 14.2. Similarly, in a study of tennis players, some of whom went on to be top 15 in the world, the best players specialized, continued to play other sports until 14, and those who plateaued at sub-elite and eventually dropped out quit other sports at 11. And it now turns out, it looks like through at least age 12, there's this sort of period of brain flexibility when playing multiple sports allows you to basically compile a range of different skills and also to have what sports scientists call a sampling period, where you test a range of different sports and find what fits both your physiology and your psychology. And this turns out to actually be the very typical pattern of elite athletes. So Tiger Woods is actually the exception, not the norm. And the norm is like two-time NBA MVP Steve Nash, who didn't even own a basketball until he was 13 and just played other sports.
Yeah, so we all heard about Tiger Woods as practically he was a toddler when he started golf.
Yeah, he was sort of famously demonstrating his swing at age 2 for Bob Hope, but he was also physically precocious in strange ways, so he could balance standing on his father's palm when he was 6 months old, and so he developed physically very quickly. And he, his father didn't push him to play. I've asked him about this, and I quote him on it in the Sports Gene that he says it was me sort of demanding that my father create opportunities for me to play. Like, he never pushed me to play. So he was unusual in a lot of different ways. And he's what I call a unicorn in sports science. He's actually the vast exception, but we focus on him, whereas all these other athletes that are at his level, like Roger Federer, played badminton, basketball, and soccer. His parents forced him to keep playing multiple sports. Well, clearly didn't harm his skill development.
Yeah. So, and you cite studies that show that this diversification has a positive protective effect and provides performance benefits. So, why do you think parents are ignoring that option?
And if you can look at events like, first of all, I think it's counterintuitive to them. Again, this idea of the 10,000 hour rule, you have to compile 10,000 hours of practice. If you start calculating that, that means you have to start pretty early to get there. But I think I pretty thoroughly sort of debunk that rule in the Sports Gene, but it's still incredibly pervasive. I mean, I've seen coaches who've shown me training plans where they budget in exactly 10,000 hours, and that means they basically really, if they're going to have the kids ready for college sports, they have to start them by at least 8 on that road and playing year-round. And I think, coaches are sort of pushing parents to do that. So if you want the best team of 8-year-olds, then specialization probably is not a bad idea. But if you want the best teen athletes, then you don't want them to specialize. But if you're a coach or a league and your incentive is just to have the best 8-year-olds, well, you don't care what happens to someone's child after that, right? So you can see things like AAU, which now has a second grader's national championship for basketball on full 10-foot rims. And these are just kids heaving balls at 10-foot rims that they can hardly even get the ball there. But there's all this gear around there, and there are other leagues that come to recruit the kids. And so the parents feel like if they don't go, then they're going to be behind the kids who did. And the fact is they're not, but it takes a lot of convincing to show them that.
We are talking about the hyper-specialization of youth sports and why our guest says this is a problem. It's not good for children. young children to concentrate on a single sport with the hopes of becoming an elite athlete. And we wonder if your child or your grandchild plays just one sport. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is David Epstein. He is the author of The Sports Gene. He's a reporter at ProPublica, and he is also the author of a piece that appeared recently in the New York Times. Sports should be child's play. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's now 20 minutes past 6 o'clock. We are talking with a guest who says there is a growing body of evidence that children playing sports in a too structured manner too early in life can lead to serious injuries and less success in that sport. We are talking with the author of The Sports Gene, who also wrote a recent op-ed for the New York Times on the hyper-specialization of youth sports, talking about why this can be dangerous and counterproductive. And we're welcoming your thoughts, your questions, your experiences. Why do you suppose some parents funnel their children into a single sport at an early age? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. You can also tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. David Epstein is the author of The Sports Gene, Inside the Science of Extraordinary Athletic Performance. You also in the piece, David, talk about the adult size of the playing field and how this is this harms children. Why is that?
Yeah, it doesn't. It's bad for their engagement in the sport and really for their skill development. So USA Hockey just did a great demonstration. You can see the video of it on their website, where they made adults play on an ice rink that was sort of equivalent to the size that an 8-year-old perceives when they're on a norm on a regulation rink. And so this rink was like 310 by 130 feet for full-size adults. And basically they ended up hardly even playing a team game. It turns into an individual game because there's so much space between people. They don't communicate that much. Lots of people are out of the game for a lot of the game, so they're not really engaged. And that's what happens in a lot of youth sports. I mean, the size of a soccer goal, a regulation soccer goal compared to kids, it makes no sense. In sports like baseball, where in some youth sports we shrink the ball because kids have small hands. In baseball we don't. It puts a ton of torque on the elbow ligaments and things like that. And what we really should do is take a cue, I think, from a country like Brazil, the host of the World Cup right now, where if you go there, there are millions of kids not playing soccer, but they're playing a game called futsal, which they can play on little patches of concrete or grass or indoor courts. And it's soccer on like the size of like a volleyball court with only five a side. And it's totally frenetic. The kids touch the ball five times as many times per minute as normal soccer. Even if they don't have the ball, there are no wallflowers. They're never out of the game because they're always having to make decisions and react to things around them. And we know now that that's best for training what's called anticipatory skills. So we think of pro athletes as being able to sort of react at superhuman speeds to things around them. And it turns out they actually have normal reaction times, but they are able to better judge the future based on arrangements of other bodies around them. And this kind of compressed playing space not only serves their engagement and gets everyone involved, but puts them through sort of a rapid training for those anticipatory skills that they'll need no matter what sport they play.
And what that's called futsal?
Futsal. It's spelled F-U-T-S-A-L, but it's pronounced futsal.
Well, that sounds like football.
It does. Of course, our football is the weird one. But yeah, and it's just this sort of it's also actually played with a ball that's smaller than a normal soccer ball and heavy, so the ball really stays on the ground. So the kids work on footwork, and a kind of a bonus for the immature brain is that since the ball is difficult to lift, there's almost no headers.
so they don't, you know, have to worry about concussions or more likely subconcussive hits over and over.
Well, in fact, you speaking of the brain and concussions, you say that all the attention and the furor over concussions is. That's a problem. You think that this hyper specialization is an even bigger problem.
Yeah, concussions are important, obviously, and so are subconcussive hits, just the accumulation of hits to the head. But that primarily affects a small number of sports, and primarily football, of course, which while it has a lot of participants, also doesn't have a lot of female athletes, so it's still restricted to a certain population, whereas these kinds of injuries, stress fractures in the vertebrae, torn ligaments in the elbow, things that will affect that kids are having at age 11 now that will affect them for the rest of their life. They will deal with these forever, are much more common, are affecting a much, much larger proportion of youth athletes, and there's very little attention being paid to it. One of the strange things, because of this trend of hyper-specialization that's showing up in injuries, is that a family's income turns out to be a positive predictor of the chance that their child will have a serious adult overuse injury, because only families that have resources can now pay for this private coaching and year-round travel that specialization requires. There aren't very many health problems where being better off turns out to put your child in harm's way, but that's what we're now seeing.
Yeah. So I'm thinking of these are affluent parents. They're obviously educated professional people, and yet they want their kids to have this private coaching and the year-round travel and to become some sort of elite athlete.
Yeah, I think it comes from a good place, right? It says, well, if I can give my kids something that the other kids aren't. The problem is it just runs contrary to what all the sports science is telling us. I mean, if it said, hey, this works, this is the way to make the best eventual athlete, I'd say, well, then, we should do it. And I think for some years now, the health data has been emerging showing that it's not healthy. But I think, sadly, that's not enough for parents to sort of ignore this siren call of college scholarships and if they think their child might be a professional athlete. But now we have this skill development argument that has really, just in like the last couple of years, really added very strong evidence showing through this sort of period of brain plasticity through at least age 12, you can make a better eventual adult athlete with diversification.
Yeah, I'm just thinking, I don't have kids, but I do have nieces and nephews, and it seems to me that they want to play a certain sport, that's what they want to do. And Billy, forget about Little League, let's get you to play some soccer. And he's going to say, I don't want to.
And if he's going to say he wants to play only one particular sport, if the kid is driving that, I think we tell kids all the time things that we think are good for them. And so I think we really need to present appealing opportunities for kids to play multiple sports, and I think they will, if given those opportunities. I don't think most kids are driving that kind of specialization, even though they probably like it when it's happening until they get hurt.
Yeah.
But if you want to produce, have the best athlete down the line, it's just it's simply not the way to go.
Actually, there are a lot of kids who are dropping out of youth sports, aren't they? And they're not sticking with the sport.
Yeah, so burnout rate is high, and that's another issue with hyper-specialization. So the burnout rates tend to be quite high because and there are a number of factors for that. So in a pretty famous study of tennis players, the childhoods of elite tennis players versus sub-elite tennis players, it looked like early on when kids were sort of forced to specialize, the kids who were forced to specialize were actually just the ones who hit puberty first, and their parents and the coaches mistook that for them having really high potential, because they would be a half foot taller than the other kids around them, and they would become coordinated faster. But it was purely just because they hit puberty earlier, even though they were of the same chronological age of their peers. But the coaches and parents mistook that for talent and said, "Oh, I've really got something here," and started forcing those kids who hit puberty earlier to start traveling, to have private coaching, et cetera, et cetera. Those kids were just destroying their peers. They're ranked among the top juniors in the world. Then everyone goes through puberty. and at, you know, whatever, 14 or 15, they lose for the first time ever, and almost all of them have quit within two seasons. Yeah. Almost all of them.
We have a news break.
Another problem.
Oh, well, go ahead.
Oh, sorry.
We have a news break in just a minute, but what is the problem?
The problem is the earlier you push selection, the more likely you mistake talent, you mistake physical maturation for talent and end up putting someone in the wrong sport anyway.
We are talking with David Epstein. He is the author of The Sports Gene. He's a reporter at ProPublica, and he is also the author of an op-ed piece that appeared recently in the New York Times called Sports Should Be Child's Play, which was on the hyper-specialization of youth sports. And he says that this is a big problem. It's hurting kids and hurting youth sports. And we're welcoming your thoughts and questions for him at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We'll talk more about what should be done to encourage kids, how about parents, to allow kids to play more than one sport. Our guest says they'd be better off for it. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. How should parents encourage their child's athletic abilities? Should they pay for private coaches and get their child involved in a single sport at an early age and practice, practice, practice? I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 6:37. We are talking with a guest who says that's actually not what parents should do. He says that this is called the hyper-specialization of youth sports, and that it's actually dangerous for the child, can lead to all sorts of adult injuries in children. And he says it doesn't necessarily help them in the sport that is chosen, that they have less athletic success than others who diversify their sports playing abilities earlier in life. We welcome your questions. We welcome your experiences. 1-800-642-1234. Do you think there is too much pressure on children to perform as adult athletes? Do you have children or grandchildren in sports, just one, or do you try to get your child involved in all sorts of different sports? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. Our guest is David Epstein. He is the author of The Sports Gene, Inside the Science of Extraordinary Athletic Performance. And he also wrote a piece that appeared recently in the New York Times, Sports Should Be Child's Play. And we have a number of callers waiting, so let's go to Bill in Orfordville. Hi, Bill.
Good morning. Good morning. This is a great topic. I've spent nearly 40 years coaching girls' fast pitch softball, the pitching aspect of it. I've had coached at the Olympic level all the way down. I'm retired now, of course, but I've never seen any pitcher that amounted to anything that didn't practice. And over an extended period of time, the physical movement is a ballet dance movement, and the repetition required to achieve the accuracy requires repetition and continual repetition. And the other comment I would make is there's a lot of anecdotal information being tossed around here, some good, some bad. I really think it's a discussion worth having. I think more research is needed. It's just from my experience, I would tend to disagree with this gentleman. The second part of that, or third part of that, is our society demands performance from children. We don't, it's a personal choice kind of thing. For somebody to categorically come out and say this is all bad and this is all wrong, there's nothing that substantiates that.
No, and Bill, before you go on, do you think that the girls that you are teaching the pitching to were in this sport when they were under 5 years old, or and just concentrating on this?
We start this stuff typically around 8-9 years old. Actually, you start it as soon as they can walk and talk. When they just, you give them a ball and you play with it, and you see how the kids react to it. And you know, whether they do it or not is up to them, of course, and their families. But that's a personal choice kind of thing. This is the United States. We don't have socialism here. If a kid wants to get ahead in medicine, when does he start reading books? I mean, you know, if you could, you could make arguments all over the place, and but I do agree with more research.
Yeah, well,
I have a grandson that was in a sports program at Stanford, and at an early age where they were studying these things. I have no problem with the research, but you're talking about the reason people play sports and put their kids in sports in America is status.
Yeah.
It has to do with status and nothing more. Or nothing less than that, and money.
All right. Well, Bill, lots to talk about here. David, you want to pick and choose what you want to react to?
Yeah. First of all, there's a mountain of research. So I'm not sure what you're talking about with more research, because there's a ton. I mean, this is, it was counterintuitive to me that early diversification works, but it has been shown over and over and over again now. There's more research coming. As far as this being a free country, that's absolutely true, and nobody is suggesting that it be, that sport hyperspecialization be regulated away. I'm only talking about giving parents the information from the latest sports science and what it says. Also, of course, in excelling in any sport requires a ton of practice. And nobody is even arguing that kids should be spending less time in sports overall. There just seems to be a protective effect of playing multiple sports through at least age 12. And nobody's suggesting anything else. But as far as more research, I mean, you know, I just add an afterword to the sports gene, and I have all the citations of the many studies that are finding the exact same thing with respect to sport diversification. And indeed, parents should act accordingly based on whatever they think, but with that information in mind.
Bill, thank you very much for the call. Carolyn in La Crosse is with us now. Hi, Carolyn.
Hi there. Thank you for having the show. I myself did not play a single sport growing up. Not till eighth grade, I picked up a basketball, ended up playing in college, and never had an injury because I played three sports throughout my high school career. And in high school, I set multiple records, and I still hold them 30 years out.
Congratulations.
Well, thank you. And that's not the point. My point is just that I see this. I have three young children, and I don't push them. And I've also seen over the years I coach basketball. Kids that excel in high school are not the kids that have been playing the whole time. Everybody matures differently. You're physically not really ready and coordinated. And kids that have never touched a ball in high school, they get that coordination, and it comes if that's something they want to do. And I loved it by the time I hit high school, and I played all the time. But again, I still maintain my volleyball, my softball, track. And I just think it's healthier. I never had an injury. And I just see, I think this gentleman's research is pointing out kind of what my gut has told me all along.
Does that surprise you that Carolyn didn't pick up a basketball till she was in high school and holds all these records, David?
I mean, I think that's a little bit unusual. It doesn't totally surprise me, because her experience sounds very much like what the sports science says you should be doing. I mean, that's usually, I would say, exposure starts a little bit earlier than that as opposed to specialization, but it's certainly not out of the question. I mean, again, Steve Nash, who, you know, was one of the greatest NBA point guards of all time, a two-time NBA MVP, didn't pick up a basketball until he was 13 years old. Hakeem Olajuwon, who might be the greatest basketball center of all time, didn't play basketball until he was 17 years old. So those are really counterintuitive, but it actually turns out to be more the norm than the exception. So I'm not totally surprised, and I think that's pretty wonderful to never have had an injury. You know, most people, no matter what, if they've played a lot of sports for a long time, have something. So that's phenomenal, and I think attests to kind of going about it in a way that really fits your physiology at the time. And Joy, I think her name was, also mentioned differences in physical maturation. I mean, again, the younger and younger we pick, we move selection for sports leagues, the more likely we just get kids who are born in the early part of the year who, while they might be 8 years old like all of their 8-year-old peers, are actually about a year older, and so they're just bigger and more coordinated. And we're misjudging what we think is talent. It's actually just physical maturation, and that's going to kind of go away, and we're going to select poorly, basically.
Yeah. Well, so we still have other callers, but what, based on the research, what do you advise parents do if they do want to encourage their child to excel with their athletic abilities?
I would have them expose them to multiple sports, make multiple sports attractive. And I think most kids pretty naturally, if they're exposed to kind of the range of sports in the U.S., will want to at least try multiple sports. And I would encourage parents to basically do what Roger Federer's parents did, which are one of my colleagues at Sports Illustrated wrote a kind of a biography of him and described his parents as pulley, not pushy. So Roger himself actually wanted to focus in on tennis when he was like 10, and his parents forced him for a couple more years to continue playing badminton, basketball, and soccer because he loved those as well, and so he did. But eventually, you know, he focused in on tennis, and future elites usually focus in their mid to late teen years, and that's fine. But they kept exposing him and sort of really encouraged him to try a couple other sports just for a little longer, and I think through at least age 12. That's what we should do, and you know, actively buck that trend of preparing for whatever the 7-year-old travel league.
Yeah, let's go next. Thank you very much, Carolyn, for the call. Our next caller is Tom in Madison. Hello, Tom.
Hi, nice show this morning. I grew up in Chicago, and I grew up across the street from a park. And I think there's a little bit of a lot of competition going on, but not as much fun. We basically played pickup ball games. We took hand mowers out and mowed the infield, and we did all these sort of things where we made up a lot of our own solutions. We did a lot of problem solving. When we were playing baseball, we had to figure out if we had little kids, we would have 30-foot baselines. If we had larger kids, we would have 60-foot baselines. There's a lot of comparison and a lot of compromise and a lot of problem solving. Whereas today, before I moved to Wisconsin, in that same house, in that same park, I noticed a trend where there was a lot of soccer coaches and football coaches just basically yelling at children and a lot of adults, but very few kids just out having fun. And I wonder if we missed that part of it.
Mm-hmm. David?
I think absolutely, and that's interesting, and that's you know, I think probably the kind of fun experiences that keep kids engaged in a sport and really gets to what I think is, you know, you mentioned these sort of kids, adults just sort of yelling at kids, and it's like adults are taking over that problem-solving aspect of the sport, right? Sport isn't just running around and throwing balls. It's also this sort of cognitive problem-solving, and I think as we make youth sports feel more professional, the adults take over the cognitive problem-solving part of sports, so the kids don't learn it as well. An example that pops to mind is there's now a 10-year-old's, it's called a diaper division. I think it's under 10, a world golf championships in Asia, and kids fly from all over the world to play in it, and they have their dads standing behind them basically telling them, you know, what club to use and what, you know, how to read the green and exactly how to hit, and then the kid just swings. So it's like the father is the brain and the kids is just like a sack of motor skills. And so there you're really taking away from them all the cognitive decision making in a sport. And that's an extreme example, but that's, you know, so it's a pressure to be good at 10 years old that really bars them from learning the problem solving part of the game. And I think that happens in a lot of different ways.
One more call. Hayward in Milwaukee. Hi, Hayward.
Hello, how are you doing?
Good. What's up? Go ahead, Hayward, with your question or comment.
Study.
Oh, I'm sorry. For some reason, Hayward, we're having a very hard time hearing your telephone call, so apologize for that. Well, what's I guess David, what's the takeaway for our listeners on hyper specialization of youth sports?
Well, I would say we're going very actively and very rapidly in the wrong direction. We should preserve what sports scientists are now calling a sampling period for youth athletes through at least age 12, because we know, and we've known for a while, that it reduces injuries and the kind of injuries that will stay with kids as they grow up. But now there's really this burgeoning load of evidence showing that it makes better adult athletes. And that's something that I think may actually help sway this trend in some other countries where there are centralized sports science bodies like the UK and like Australia. Australia, which, by the way, wins about 10 times as many Olympic medals per capita as the United States.
Hmm.
They have started disseminating that information through centralized sports science institutes to buck that trend. and to preserve a sampling period, and to expose athletes to multiple sports. Even as adults are doing that in Australia, and we're not doing it here. We're only going in the wrong direction here, and I think we'll end up with more kids who have adult injuries and probably won't be active for life, which is a whole other issue, because we want them to be active as adults, and it will curtail the athletic success of some athletes, and there may be some exceptions to that, kids who deal with hyperspecialization and overcome it anyway, but it's not the norm.
Thank you so much for being with us.
It's my pleasure.
David Epstein is the author of The Sports Gene, Inside the Science of Extraordinary Athletic Performance, and he also wrote a piece that appeared recently in the New York Times, Sports Should Be Child's Play. And we have linked that article to the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. I'm Joy Cardine. Our wake-up call is coming up next. This is the Ideas Network.